Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning. We have learned that some liberals choke on even a small piece of Pastor Scheidbach's mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
My deep sympathy and much prayers for our friends and neighbors in Joplin, Missouri, and all of you living in Tornado Alley. I trust you will find grace to help in this time of your need. I'll certainly do what I can. Memorial Day 2011. We remember Sunday, May 29, in the a.m. services at 9:30 a.m. and 10:45 a.m. Come remember with us. 1310 West Bedarabia Road. As you're traveling west on Bedarabia Road, look for the lighthouse. Only 3.5 miles west of the 101 exit at Bedarabia Road. As you're traveling west, look for the lighthouse. Happy Memorial Day weekend, praying for all our troops, and especially for my own hero, Zachary David Scheidbach, PFC U.S. Army, hoorah, preparing to deploy destination Afghanistan. Go with God, my son. Memorial Day, formerly called Decoration Day, began as a commemoration of the soldiers who died in the Civil War. After WW2, it was decided to make it a day to commemorate all our brave soldiers who, as Lincoln put it, quote, gave their last full measure of devotion, end quote. You know, I think Lincoln's Gettysburg Address is the quintessential Memorial Day speech. It embodies the soul of America. It breathes the very spirit of liberty. In it, he reaffirmed our dedication to the founding principle of liberty that, quote, all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, end quote. It acknowledges that our brave soldiers died to preserve, quote, this nation under God, end quote. Oh, yeah. The American president, Abraham Lincoln, actually said those words in his most famous speech, delivered at Gettysburg in 1863. Lincoln's speech is very relevant today, for we are engaged in a new civil war, a fight between opposing ideologies battling for the soul of America. And the stakes in this war are the same, so that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. Friends, if the progressives win, our representative republic will fall, and you can kiss your beloved democracy goodbye. Hey, the only thing preserving your beloved democracy is the laws articulated in the Constitution and preserved by our representative republican form of governance. Our brave soldiers died to preserve a republic, not a democracy. Surprise? While you remember our fallen, bear in mind what they fought for is at stake in the election of 2012. Now, folks, I have said that if the progressives win in 2012, I fear our republic will collapse and the first victim will be your beloved democracy, as we have come to understand it. I'm going to talk to you about the Achilles heel of democracy and why democracy can never survive without a Christian-based republican form of government. Have I got your attention?
Stand by. Hi. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Our founders understood that democracy had a fatal flaw, in fact, a couple of them. Someone said, quote, democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for lunch. A republic is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote, end quote. It has been attributed to Benjamin Franklin, who, after the Congress voted to adopt the Constitution, was asked, well, sir, what did you give us, a republic or a monarchy? He answered, a republic if you can keep it. Note, a republic, not a democracy. Perhaps you never noticed that when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, you say, and to the republic for which it stands. You do not say, and to the democracy for which it stands. Oh, that's right. You grew up in a public school system that did not open with the Pledge of Allegiance. And when you attended sports events, you never even noticed all those people standing up with their hand over their heart and listened to what it is that they were saying. Well, the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag is a pledge to the republic for which it stands. One of the great victories of the Communist Party in America has been their clever use of rhetoric to reshape Americans' thinking from viewing themselves as a republic into thinking of themselves as a democracy. And they did this by emphasizing the fact that in our system of government, our founders did take one important feature of democracy, and that is the popular vote. You see, ancient republics did not allow the people to decide who served as their leaders. The common people, for example, did not vote for Caesar. Our founders framed a unique republic. Among the things that made it unique is their principle of the separation of powers. They discerned that government power had three essential functions: to make laws, to enforce those laws, and to interpret and adjudicate those laws. Ancient republics invested all these powers in one person, more or less answerable to a tribal, to tribal leaders or a senate, as in Rome. Guided by the understanding that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, our founders broke these functions into three separate branches of government: legislative, judiciary, and executive. The power of making laws was given to the legislative branch. This branch was jealously segregated from those whose job was to enforce those laws and from those whose job was to interpret and apply them. Another important innovation is their separation of the legislative into two separate houses and the provision that before a law could become binding upon the people, it had to not only pass both houses, but also receive the approval of the executive. Now, this makes law passing a slow and tedious process, requiring much public deliberation and open debate. It's supposed to be that way anyway. Pelosi, someone tell Pelosi that, please. With the people deciding on these questions. Now, where does the idea of democracy come into play? Well, right here. As to the question of who will be given the power to serve in these offices, the founders borrowed the democratic principle of popular vote. They invested in the people the power to decide who serves in the legislative and executive branches and gave to those two a shared responsibility in defining the judiciary. Now, the president nominates with the advice and consent of the Senate, as you know, the Supreme Court justices and so on. One could reasonably say our founders gave us a democratic republic, meaning that it is a republic where the rulers are appointed by popular vote of the people. The only part of our system that is democratic is in how the rulers are elected and in the principle that's used in the houses to pass laws. It was the introduction of this principle into the system that the founders debated most about and feared the most. It is because of this principle, the idea that the common man, the general public, would have the power to vote and by that vote decide who would represent them, and that this would inevitably create a situation where those who governed would have to be responsive to the demands and interests of those that govern in order to hold their power. In this is a weakness our founders feared the most. However, upon the belief that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that those who govern receive their just right to govern from the consent of the governed, well, there was no other way to justly appoint rulers. I mean, popular vote, that's the only way to do it. And this is the Achilles heel of democracy. It's the weakest link in the system. It's the reason our founders repeatedly stated that the form of government they framed for us depended upon the morality of the people. John Adams said the Constitution was framed for a moral and religious people. He said it was wholly inadequate for the government of any other. And this is the reason, because of this fatal flaw of democracy. You see, the fatal flaw of democracy was recognized by our founders to be the fact that if the people are unruly, without conscience, without a clear compass to guide their moral sense, without a moral sense that's instructed by the laws of nature and of nature's God, that's the way they understood it, they understood that such people would elect scoundrels to office who would promise them the most loot from the public treasury. In other words, as one shrewd thinking man once said, a democracy will only last until the people learn they can vote themselves money out of the public treasury. This is attributed to a Scotsman named Alexander Fraser Tytler, who, it is supposed, made this comment at about the time our founders created our republic. Now, some dispute whether he said this exactly, but what I have read of what we know he did say and what we know he did write amounts to the same thing. Most likely, it's someone's paraphrase or summation of Tytler's views on the subject. Besides, our own Benjamin Franklin made the point with greater force. He said, quote, "When the people find that they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic," end quote. Now, here is the situation. The enemy of our liberty has attacked the Achilles heel of our form of government. And the Achilles heel is greed. Not the greed of those who invest their own sweat and ingenuity in labor to produce goods and services and make an income and build wealth and wish to keep it, with the liberty to distribute it as they see fit, since they earned it. No, that's not greed. That's the fundamental natural right of a man. Oh, no. What destroys a democracy is not the greed of the hard-working man. It's the greed of the people who manipulate the system to pick the pockets of their neighbors. The greed of people, old and young, who demand from that invisible, nameless thing called society, take care of them. Those who want the government to pay for their food, their clothing, their health care. The greed of the people who learn that if they vote for a certain person, oh, he'll pay their mortgage for them. You remember that idiot in one of those town hall meetings? Or buy them a color TV. You know, that's the greed that kills a democracy. The greed of people who suppose society must bail them out when they make bad business decisions. Greed. Oh, Mr. Marx, it's greed, all right. The greed of men like you who imagine they have the right to take what one man labored to produce and give it to whomever you choose. It's disgusting how greedy Americans have become. The greedy poor, the greedy aged, the greedy young are manipulated by the greedy politician. Look, fundamentally, at the bottom line, when government leaves us alone, we do fine. I'm not talking about enforcing laws that protect freedom, that protect the free market from predators. I'm talking about what Jefferson and the rest of them were talking about when they warned that when greedy people find out they can vote themselves money out of the public trough, that will, quote, herald the end of the republic, end quote. Those of you allowing politicians to scare you into thinking Ryan's voucher system will cut you off from receiving the medicine you need are an example of this. His system will save Medicare, you dolts. But you listen to politicians who own you through fear. And they are the ones you had better fear. They will promise you the moon. But do they offer a concrete plan to address the obvious problems we are facing right now with a nation that is on the brink of bankruptcy? Why won't you wake up and realize it's over? You have broke the bank. You have sucked the pig dry, man. There's no more. If you greedy government-sucking slaves expect us to keep doling out the money to you, you had better allow men of wisdom and sense to get in control of this mess and do what must be done to fix it. Otherwise, you will suddenly wake up to realize you've been caged. You've been feeding at the government nipple and not paying attention while they're constructing a zoo right around you. I need to conclude the first segment, take a short break, but I beseech you, my fellow Americans, wake up. I was born in the USA, not in communist Russia, China, Cuba, or some Sharia slave state like Iran. I'm a free man. I was raised to be independent, to stand on my own two feet, to help my fellow man as I see fit. A fellow who deserves the help, not some stinking bum who wants to leech off his neighbors, but people who have a bad turn of fortune and need some help. And I give that help willingly and happily wherever I can, without the government telling me how much or when or to whom. I'm an American. I am not a slave. I was born free. As a young man, I began to become increasingly aware that there were people abroad and here at home who wanted to take my freedom away from me. And today it seems everywhere I look, I can see the enemies laboring to build the zoo and to build the cage they want us to all to live in. I mean, it's everywhere. From a bank that's driven by fear to build an entry into their bank that requires you to wait for a light to signal you can step inside. Oh, wow. And then you step into a cubicle. The door's locked on both sides, and you stand there like an animal, trapped in a cage, waiting for somebody inside to signal that you can enter into the bank. Excuse me? Not me, ma'am. That's not my country. I've traveled, and yeah, that's how you live in Russia. That's how you live in Cuba. That's the way enslaved people live. They live in a zoo constructed by the keepers so they can control your movement. Not me, man. You see at airports where you are virtually arrested without warrant and without even so much as probable cause. Indiscriminately, huh? They pull you aside, treat you like a criminal under arrest. I did not grow up in an America like that. And you are being conditioned to live under the care of the keepers. And when you live under the care of the keepers, you're going to live under their control, too, like animals in a zoo. Imagine. And they love to do it indiscriminately, right? That's their beloved principle. Of that, they are proud. In other words, we have been so dumbed down about personal liberty, we think it's right that they should avoid singling out only those who demonstrate behaviors or characteristics raising probable cause. It used to be a big deal, you know. What's your probable cause, officer, for pulling that fellow over, huh? You can't just go about pulling someone over because you feel like it or willy-nilly. That's harassment. You have to have probable cause, huh? But not today. Today, without probable cause and without warrant, you are seized and searched. Even on our roadways now, you are driving along and suddenly you see the barricades and the traffic being funneled down and you pass through an inspection station. I guess that's what it is. And if they decide to do so, they'll call you aside and do a search. They will seize you, search you, and interfere with your freedom of concourse, control your movement, everyone is a suspect in the zoo. Just exactly how far is it from there to a Gestapo on every corner, stopping you at their own whim without probable cause, just because they feel like it or because those orders from above have come down to say, let's do a sweep. And you're being conditioned to live in the zoo with your keepers stopping you and saying, papers, please. I've been in countries where enslaved people are treated like this. But I was born free. I'm an American. I refuse to sit back and remain quiet while I watch my country build a zoo in which they will enslave my neighbors, my child, and my grandchildren. In other words, our brave soldiers fought and died to preserve a representative republic founded on the principle that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. to ensure that this, quote, nation under God, end quote, thank you, President Lincoln, will continue to be a beacon of government of the people, for the people, and by the people. My son is not preparing to lay his life on the line to keep safe a zoo, but that this beacon of liberty should not perish from the earth. Jefferson said, quote, I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them, end quote. Nothing is so despicable as an American who thinks the government owes them a living or is responsible to take care of them. That's a slave's mentality. That's not the America I grew up in. I'll be right back. Memorial Day 2011. We remember Sunday, May 29, in the AM services at 9:30 AM and 10:45 AM. Come remember with us. 1310 West Bedarabia Road. As you're traveling west on Bedarabia Road, look for the lighthouse. Only 3.5 miles west of the 101 exit at Bedarabia Road. As you're traveling west, look for the lighthouse.
Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind men's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Heroes are made, not born. At Lighthouse Baptist Church, we're helping families make heroes with our Heroes of the Faith Sunday School, a character-building program that will have an impact on the life of your child that you will notice at home in their improved attitude and character. Call 888-770-8000. Say, I want my child to be a hero. Leave a number where we can reach you. There's no charge for this program. Call 888-770-8000 today. See our ad in the Coastal Pages directory.
Warning, Pastor Scheibach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheibach, Wayne Masseur, Paul Revere's lantern lighter here lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march. I'm talking about the Achilles heel of democracy. Everyone is talking about democracy as if it's the ideal form of government. Our founders understood the weaknesses of democracy. They also understood, however, that the right to govern must come from the consent of the governed. In fact, they viewed this as an axiomatic principle of truth. In other words, every government ultimately depends on the consent of those they govern. The difference is in how this consent is gotten. So we go a bit farther and we say the legitimate right to govern comes from the willing consent of those governed. Some practical things come into play here. Obviously, in any group of people, some will disagree with the consensus of the group. Therefore, we operate on the principle of majority rule. Now follow along. This is going to help you. Everyone gets a vote, and the proposition that gets the most votes carries, and everyone is bound to the will of the majority. Yet this also has limits. Otherwise, we have mob rule. To check mob rule, we have a contract that is premised upon a basic truth, and that is all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, these rights come from God, and they are the natural right of every individual human being. Governments are organized to protect those rights. In this, we understand that the majority cannot overpower the rights of the minority. So it is not so simple to say majority rule. Sometimes the majority must yield and be held in check to the laws of nature and of nature's God. Therefore, our founders established a republic with checks and balances to jealously protect the people from being made the subjects of any individual or group of individuals who might trample upon their individual rights. And so the people are given the power to elect the officials who would operate the government. And this is where the principle of democracy comes in. It's actually a small part of our system, but it is the Achilles heel of the system. Because as Benjamin Franklin said, once the people learn they can vote money to themselves out of the treasury, well, as he said, that will herald the end of the republic. The democratic principle of majority rule, as explained here, is at once our greatest strength and at the same time our greatest weakness. I've already explained one of the vulnerabilities of democracy, the one Benjamin Franklin and other founders feared, the greed of the masses, using their power to vote to rob the national treasury and bankrupt the country. And that's what's happening now. But there is another serious weakness in democracy, and it's the weakness that Israel fears most right now. You see, the democratic principle of majority rules can corrupt any system of government if the majority are committed to an evil course of action. Even when the weaknesses of democracy are mitigated by a constitution that is carefully crafted to protect our individual unalienable rights, if the majority of people who are voting want Sharia law to prevail in a province within Israel, Israel will be no more. This will help you understand what Brother Cain was not prepared to address, and that is this question of the right of return. Have you heard that expression thrown around? Let me help you understand it. When the Arab nations rose up and attacked Israel, and Israel astounded the world by the miraculous victory that they achieved in only 6 days, now famously called the 6 Days War, they pushed their enemy back from their borders and then occupied the territory now identified as the West Bank, the Golan Heights, the Gaza Strip, and, most importantly, Jerusalem. Many thousands of those who identified themselves as Palestinians were displaced from their homes and fled Israel in what became a war zone, instigated by the Arab nations, by the way. But the surrounding Arab neighbors wouldn't allow these refugees to come into their countries. And so they were, for all intents and purposes, without a home. Many of them settled in Gaza, Golan, East Jerusalem, and the West Bank. Israel began building settlements in these areas, established a semblance of peace and order, created a system allowing these people to find work in Israel, giving them work visas and so forth, and yet policed the area aggressively to keep terrorists from using Golan Heights, West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem as staging areas to attack Israel, which is what they were doing before. Now, after the dust of that war settled, Israel refused to yield these lands back to the Arabs. Now, here's the rub. The idea of a right to return is that these Palestinians, who are those who were displaced during that war, and their heirs, presumably, would have a right to return to Israel and have full voting privileges as other citizens with the power to vote because Israel is, after all, a democracy. So, if Israel allows this right of return, that small country will be immediately overwhelmed with Palestinians voting who openly hate Israel, don't even agree that Israel ought to exist, whose culture and beliefs and values are not compatible with those of Israel, and this will overwhelm the political system of Israel. Netanyahu understands this, and it reveals another vulnerability of democracy, you know what, that you and I had better pay attention to. It's more difficult here in this country because the country is so large. But eventually, if we are not careful to enforce our immigration laws, millions flooding across our borders who do not share our cultural values or understand our form of government or have even that natural affinity for this country that is in the bosom of all who identify as American, if we allow millions of people to come here and vote whose personal identity is not American first, but instead they want to wave the Mexican flag, the Canadian flag, or the communist flag, these people will eventually overwhelm the ballot box and America will be no more. That's what Netanyahu understands. And if he concedes on the right of return, he knows Israel is lost. If we continue down the path we are on, if we allow the communists in our government to keep feeding the greed of Americans, baiting them to become willing subjects of the state living in fear, to live in their zoo, if we don't protect our borders, our culture, our language, thank you, Savage, and if we do not dramatically make a hard turn back to the principles of our founders, America will be no more. And there won't be anything here for our brave soldiers to die for. And we will have betrayed the memory of our brave soldiers who have died to preserve this one nation under God. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. You call in and say lights on if you agree with what I'm saying today, and you say lights off if you disagree. You can leave as long a message as you like. And the number to call is 1-888-770-8000. That number is 1-888-770-8000. 1-888-770-8000. And say lights on if you will ride like Revere and spread the warning loud and clear. Or in other words, if you agree with what I'm saying and will let others know about this show, you say lights on. If you don't agree with me and you think the lights are off in the belfry here, you call. Likewise, you just say, lights off. And fuss at me if you want. Straighten me out if you like. What will it be today? Lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. 888-770-8000. We depend on your calls to get a feel for how our message and how this show is being received in your area. So you please call in and let your voice be heard. If you're calling within the continental United States, 1-888-770-8000 is the number to use. If you want to contact me from outside the country, or for those who prefer it, email me by going to our website, clicking on the Contact Us button, and there's a form there you can fill out. You can choose lights on, lights off, and leave your message. The web address is thebrainmassageshow.com. Thebrainmassageshow.com. If you are in a hurry, you can give me a lights on or lights off and hang up. If you're in a hurry, you can just click the lights on button and then send. If you will, please leave a message. In any event, give me a call at 1-888-770-8000 or send me an email at thebrainmassageshow.com. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights-off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message.
Memorial Day 2011. We remember Sunday, May 29, in the a.m. services at 9:30 a.m. and 10:45 a.m. Come remember with us. 1310 West Bedaravia Road. As you're traveling west on Bedaravia Road, look for the lighthouse. Only 3.5 miles west of the 101 exit at Bedaravia Road. As you're traveling west, look for the lighthouse.
For a complete brain massage experience, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain.